If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
Me being married to Ryan, he'd want to talk husband, wife, and I would say, I don't have time to empathize right now. This is time to just get back on the phone. I'm sorry, like you're 16. Like he had so many deals just fall through that year. So many counter offers that he was in a very tough market in that particular role. He wanted me to feel sorry for him some days. And I'm like, we just don't have time for that.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. And I'm really excited to introduce you to one of our clients, Jenny Diaz.
I always have 17,000 tabs open. There's so many things open on my computer. I am distracted all day. But if I look down, which I do constantly, and see something that's always there, it makes a huge difference. And I can't make that happen on a computer. I also think, and I think it's true for me, if I write it down and I have a little bit more physical effort into making the plan, I'm more like, I'm doing this.
Jenny is one of the co-founders of Apex Recruitment Group, and they founded in 2021.
In my heart of hearts, every time I sit back and think, where do we want to go? I start writing goals. It's always growing a team. Clearly, we were challenged in that last year, but I think as we're coming out of that, we want that.
What makes this episode special is a couple of things. Number one, we're doing it in person in Tampa, Florida. And number two, Jenny's just been to our Recruitment Coach Live Summit, which we hosted in St. Pete for a couple of days. And also, it's just always lovely to catch up with Jenny and learn from her. So Jenny, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm excited. And I think people say humbled too often, but I am extremely humbled to be sitting with you, Mark. So I appreciate you taking the time.
I think what's cool is I think you found me through the podcast, right?
I found you before we started Apex. I probably listened for 1 or 2 years, and just every day it was like, I want to do that. So yes, thank you. This is a part of the journey.
Fantastic. And so we just literally wrapped up the live conference. What were your impressions, takeaways?
Yeah, so a lot. As usual, there's a lot to think about, a lot to process. I think the main one, the key one is, and this is sincere, like how happy I came. I'm just glad I went because there were a million things going on. It wasn't the best year last year. I didn't want to show up and tell people it wasn't the best year last year. But you show up and you realize like these are people I know, they're friends, they're here to encourage. And I think just that momentum over time has meant a lot. And so that was number one. Not even the speakers were great, and I'm grateful for everything they said, but just being around people who are in it is, and from a different perspective, was really big. And that always is, I think, maybe the biggest thing, but learned a lot, have a lot of notes. I will process them all on the plane ride home, potentially.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think you're absolutely right. Like being with other people who get it and who are, you know, we all have our own struggles and journey, but in recruiting, you can just be real, and they've been there and they've had their own battles, and
right.
Yeah, definitely. That is, that's cool. So, you know, I'm going to ask you this. How did you get into recruiting?
How long do you have? So long story short, no, I'm going to make it longish. I got a degree in Hebrew. I went to Israel, got a degree in Hebrew Bible, realized I don't want to be an academic, and I have many good friends that did really cool things with that. I came back during the recession, so it was 2011, and had no idea what I was going to do. And my uncle at the time worked at a car rental dealership. He was really high up. And he said, if you need a job, and I'm like, I don't want to work there. Well, I needed a job. So I reached out and I ended up in car rental. Not crazy about that situation. Had a let me rethink everything moment. Ran to a dude ranch that extended for 2 years. And finished up at the Dude Ranch with a small bonus that I thought was enough to like take me around the world, and it did somehow. And on the way, I met some friends in the UAE, and we met a recruiter, like my first real-time recruiter, and I thought, maybe I want to do recruiting. And he said, don't do it. Whatever you do, don't do it. And he gave me this test, and he looked at my results, and he said, nah, you shouldn't be a recruiter. So I came home to the U.S., still no job, ended up in the D.C. area, and had read all these books kind of leading up to what I want to do, and they just said, show up. Places. So I ended up at a networking group and a recruiter was there. And I said, can I show up at your place? And longer story short, they hired me and I started as an admin. Then people quit because people quit recruiting all the time. And yeah. I became a recruiter. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. So wait a sec. So by way of studying Hebrew, traveling, car washing,
yeah,
working on a dude ranch, you somehow found your way to recruiting. But the interesting bit of the story is two things. Number one is you met a recruiter and thought, oh, I might like to do that.
Yeah.
And the second part is he told you not to. So the first part, what was it about him describing what he did that you thought sounded appealing?
So rewind.
Okay.
The dude ranch. I got back into reading after academic life. I realized I actually like reading. And I read all these books about what you want to do, what I want to do when I grow up. And they were all by recruiters. And I was way more interested in what they were doing than the things they were writing about. And one of those books was actually, I forget the exact title, like guerrilla marketing for the job search or something like that. So full circle, yesterday I actually met David Perry in person. I'm like, hey, you're the reason I'm a recruiter. But he had all these extreme tactics to get in front of people and show up that I had no idea about. So I just was following the book, and I knew I wanted to do recruiting and had an opportunity to meet this person in the UAE who told me no, you shouldn't, but here I am.
So I didn't know the David Perry connection.
I saw him on the guest list and I'm like, I know this book. And so I met him yesterday and I met his wife first and I said, Are you all the, and they were absolutely, have you read our
David
book?
Perry?
Yeah. So right. it had a life-changing impact on me.
Wow. That's so cool that you actually met him by like complete coincidence.
10 years
yesterday.
Later. I think I started in recruiting 10 years ago this week. So
that is awesome.
Full circle.
So his book is called Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters,
or
Guerrilla Job Hunting. It's one or the other.
I'm sorry, David. Did you ever see this?
Yeah, we'll put a link to the book in the show notes and with the correct title.
Yes.
So that's awesome. So you'd already researched and kind of had an idea of this. Why did this recruiter tell you not to do it? What was the rationale there?
So there's lots of job fit profile tests. Okay. And fair, he gave me the test and he said, this will help you decide what you want to do. And I came up as very analytical, very research-oriented, introverted, all the things that my husband is not, and he is also a recruiter. And I totally understand why he said, this won't work. And I also understand that just when people tell me I can't do things, it's a somewhat of a motivating factor. So
yeah,
I just went with it.
All right. And here we are 10 years later.
Yeah.
So that is awesome. So then you managed to get yourself into a recruiting job. Mm-hmm. But then how did the whole Apex Recruitment Group thing come about?
Right. So that was 7 years later. I worked at a boutique firm in the DC area. It was a startup, had a very big personality founder, learned a ton from them, and thought I need to switch gears and go work with a firm where I'm going to have a little bit more training. It ended up being, it was a large company that had just come to the U.S. So everyone was very entrepreneurial. And I love that. And I realized this is what I keep gravitating toward. It's not really to the big company. So as our company became a bigger company, it felt less and less a fit. Meanwhile, Ryan and I had met through a series of events. He was at this company as well. He was in New York. I was in DC. He moved down. I said, we're not living in DC forever. This is way too expensive. He seemed like he liked that idea. And so when the company offered to transfer me, I went to Raleigh. He followed. And then our other founder, James, ended up in Raleigh as well. So we were there. 1 month later, COVID hit. And we were in a new market doing a new thing. Ryan was working internal at the time. But James and I were basically kind of on this island starting this thing from scratch. And as that year, a couple of years progressed, it just, the question was, we're all here. We have the skills. I always wanted to start a business, really. And Ryan is always just wants to stick it to the man. So he is ready to go. And we pulled James in somehow and made it happen.
Awesome. So you were more or less building a business from scratch anyway, but just for a bigger company. So you're like, well, why not? If this is, it's hard building a business, right? It's hard.
Right.
And why not just build or do our own thing? So I love that. So that was 2021. And then actually before, we're going to do a deep dive on Apex and what's been happening there, what's worked, what hasn't worked. But I just want to circle back. So you're seven years in recruiting prior to that.
About, more or less.
And yet this analytical introvert has found success in recruiting. So how do you explain that?
So how do I don't necessarily. I think meeting recruiters, there's some from every walk of life.
Definitely.
And if you meet Ryan and James, you have met Ryan and James. You know they are very charismatic. Ryan tells great stories. He's so funny. James can just win you over in a second. And I don't necessarily, I think those are amazing qualities in recruiters. I operate a little differently. I have my day plan. It is golden. And I read a book. I read books. So as opposed to Ryan and James, I like just dove into recruiting. Like, what can I learn? And the first thing I read was make a day plan and stick to it. So I just followed the processes I could have. And I think from living overseas, I was ready to be uncomfortable and pivot. And I think that was maybe a big thing that goes against my personality naturally, but I've kind of grown into. And that has worked for me.
Love it. I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. There is not one personality that makes a successful recruiter. I've met people, obviously you do get the extreme introverts and then, you know, but I don't believe there's one type. Mm-hmm. I think it's other qualities that are more important for sure. So, so I love that. Tell me about the Jenny Diaz day plan, because this is, all recruiters need a day plan. And if you work
Ryan
for
James.
A big, if you get trained at a big company, they kind of drum that into you.
Right.
But then a lot of people, when they start their own business, they stop doing that. And it is super valuable. So what do you, tell me your planning process.
Sure. So I have this Microsoft Word doc. It's nothing special. But it has every hour, 8 a.m. to 6 a.m. I don't always start at 8. I don't always end at 6, but gives me some flexibility. And it has half-hour increments. I print it out. I take a pencil because the day will change. And I write down whatever's on my Microsoft calendar. I have a list of follow-ups that I'm going to follow up with. That's usually like 5 to 30 people, depending. I have my three main goals. I have my two jobs I'm going to work that day. I get it. I have things I'm grateful for that I've learned. I have my long-term goals. I have all these things like on a different side of the paper, my references I need to take, and some other notes. And this is just, it's just a Microsoft doc that's evolved, but I fill all that out first. And then I look at it and then I say, okay, what do I need to do for my day? And then I just fill it out in pencil. The phone rings, I erase something and rework it as the day progresses. So that's it.
That is awesome. Really, really like that. And so it sounds like this is something that you've kind of created and evolved over time, like the sections. I don't think the Hayes day plan had like, what am I grateful for on it?
No.
Right?
No.
I think
I don't always fill it out, and that's on me. But yeah.
I love that. And so you write this out every day?
90% of days.
That's awesome. You know, we used to say that if you do your day plan – once out of 5 days, you're going to be performing at 20%. If you fill it out 3 times a week, you're going to be performing at 60%, right? And so it's 90% is great. Not many people get that.
There have been times where I've lost it for several months, but when I come back, like, there is instant just focus. So yeah.
Focus is the superpower that all recruiters need, for sure. It's something I need. It's my Achilles heel. I'm scattered and almost ADHD, pursuing lots of different ideas. So explain to me why it's important to write it out, as opposed to why not just type it onto the Word doc or use Outlook calendar or whatever.
Yeah. So short is, it doesn't work for me if I do it on a computer.
Yeah.
And I think that's old school. And I also think, again, I read this book years ago, the first one I read in recruiting, that was, you need to write it out. So I just took it, but I have tried doing it digitally and failed. And I find, and I actually put a LinkedIn post the other day about this, I always have 17,000 tabs open, and you know, I don't know what all the things are on a computer. I don't know all the names, but I just know there's so many things open on my computer. I am distracted all day. But if I look down, which I do constantly, and see something that's always there, makes a huge difference. And I can't make that happen on a computer. I also think, and I think it's true for me, if I write it down and I have a little bit more physical effort into making the plan, I'm more like, I'm doing this.
You're more committed because you...
I'm more committed. That's the word. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense. Yeah. I get that. Awesome. And I like the different sections you had as well. Follow-ups, reference checks, which jobs I'm going to work. But explain to me, why are you working 2 jobs a day? Is that what... That sounds like a lot.
Yeah. So usually there's two. It's blank. So okay. I might just write one. I'm typically write two. And realistically, I usually work one.
Okay.
But I guess it's something I learned. Somebody told me, I'm not that creative, I suppose, but somebody told me, like, you can at most work 2 jobs a day.
Sure.
So I write those, like, the definite and the maybes.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I guess someone who's in a delivery role could work like one in the morning, one in the afternoon or something.
Right.
But I feel like if you're 360.
It's challenging. Yeah.
Yeah.
I rarely get to it. I forgot. I also have a submittal section. That's important.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are there any other sections you've not told us? Because
there's a thankful. This is from memory. So okay. Thankful. There's a thankful for and a thankful to section. So I also don't usually fill that out. But like people I really should say thank you to, because I need to remember that. But I don't always.
Okay. Awesome. I love that.
There might be. I think that's it.
This is brilliant, Jenny. Okay. So. You guys get together, you decide, hey, let's start a business.
Right.
And that was in 2021. And like, I believe you guys got past 1 million in year 2, which is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But what was that first year like?
So we started in 2021, December.
Okay.
So we really didn't start till like 2022. We thought, okay, let's take the tailwinds of the new year. So we started 2022 really. So you asked what the first year was like?
Yeah.
The first year. First year was funny. It was tough, and we knew it would be tough, but we also didn't know what we didn't know. So I think our first client was won. Our first bill was paid the end of March, beginning of April. And that was just like, wow,
yeah.
People will pay us. This is so cool. It worked, you know, but also, wow, we are got to make some money and scramble. But I remember, I think I put this in the prep form, just I remember when this person started, and then we looked at each other like, how do we make an invoice? And so we pulled up QuickBooks and we just like looked at it like, what, where do we start? And you know, it's really easy. So if anyone needs help, ask me. But you pull up, make an invoice, and then it like populates number one. And we're like, we can't put number one. They'll know we're frauds. So we looked around, and James has a daughter, and her birthday is December 15th. So we just put 12/15, and it felt like very like a good number to get going, and everything's gone on from there. So if anybody ever listens that we build, they kind of know from there which invoice they are.
That's hilarious. I love that. What were some of the struggles that you went through in that very first year of like building a business from scratch?
Yeah, I think we didn't know what we didn't know. Mm-hmm. We expected that to a degree, but you just can't plan on those things. We had a non-compete. So whether it was enforceable or not, I don't know, but James and I decided to respect it. So we started a brand new market, and we all took on slightly different roles. We decided to work a full desk and kind of all be recruiters. Like, we all knew how to do that. But we had different roles and goals. And so seeing some ups and downs among us, and just, you know, early on, we've all had our moments in the business where it's like, this isn't for me. And there was that first year, especially. And so pulling each other along, like, no, we're committed. No, get back on the phone. And, you know, me being married to Ryan, he'd want to talk husband, wife. And I would say, I don't have time to empathize right now. This is time to just get back on the phone. I'm sorry. Like, you're 16. Like, he had so many deals just fall through that year. Oh. So many counter offers that he was in a very tough market in that particular role. And he wanted me to feel sorry for him some days. And I'm like, we just don't have time for that. So that was his own challenge.
I want to circle back to the whole dynamic of working with a spouse and also a friend. But just sticking with that first year then. And so it sounds like you were just really hustling, and it wasn't, we should have said, so you guys do DC, Virginia, and the Carolinas?
Right, correct.
And it's construction recruitment, right?
Construction management, right.
So what were some of the other, what were the hurdles, and how did you overcome them?
So the first year we didn't do all that because some of that was in our non-compete. Our first year, we said, we're going to do Greenville, South Carolina, which I had been to once when I was like 16 for a soccer camp. So that was our familiarity with Greenville, South Carolina. But we wanted to pick a market that looked promising that we could drive to, because meeting with our clients was really, really important. So the first hurdle was not knowing anybody, even in that city, not let alone clients, candidates. We just didn't know anybody. But we made it a point, we're going to get down there as much as we can. We're going to get in front of people. And it's an incredible, incredible market. So people are just very warm. And that was, I think, the right play for us. So not knowing anyone, having that non-compete, not having any really existing, I already said, relationships, our database, just, we didn't have anything built up. But we really started from scratch December 20th without, you know, our ATS was purchased. We just started filling it in and going from there. So that was challenging. Other challenges.
Let me just pause on that one, Jenny, because so I think this is like all you're doing all new business is the thing, right?
Right.
There's no existing accounts. Right. There's nothing. So how did you guys attack that?
So we focused on, I mean, it's a really small market. So I think that, again, I think that was probably the right play, because us focusing on us, instead of calling New York and being the 13,000th call they got that day from a recruiter, we were calling a little place that said, yeah, I get some calls from recruiters, but, you know, you show up at their office, this is the first recruiter I've ever met with. You know, that was powerful,
that's cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's one way. And then just all doing this place together, we could multiply ourselves.
Right.
And so the jobs came in very quickly. We also had a great 2022 was a great year just for construction. So that helped a lot, because people were okay to meet with us because they truly needed to hire.
So it sounds like meeting people in person was important to you guys, which I agree with, by the way. But why did you decide to do it that way?
To meet in person?
Yeah.
Part of it is our training. And I think the other part is one of the many reasons we started the company was we were building relationships with like entrepreneurs that we could sit down and talk with about their needs. And they like that made an impression on us. And we saw that, you know, if you meet somebody, it's not only that they want to trust you, which is true, but you also are invested in them versus, hey, you need somebody. Okay, fine. Thanks. And hang up the phone and they're just somebody. But every recruiter says this, and I think most people are genuine about pursuing this, but we wanted to be about the relationship more than the transaction. We wanted to go meet, I think our first meeting was with Mike. Mike told us where to eat that night. He recommended some restaurants, and we got to go to that restaurant, experience it with him. Well, not with him, but, you know, go come back and say, you know, hey, we ate at this restaurant. It was great. Where else should we eat? And just have like a real, just more enjoyable.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's so true. You know, over the phone, quick conversation, more transactional, you know, that's not really a strong foundation to build a relationship, a business relationship, you know, over. So, you know, you're going to get more rapport. You get to know people better. You have their dedicated, undivided attention as well, right? Because if it's a phone call and they're squeezing you in between meetings, and they're distracted, that's not the same as the quality you get from like actually sitting with someone for, you know, an hour, right?
Yeah. You're saying this better than me, but all these things,
No, but this is why I think it's, you know, you choose the right strategy 100%. And people feel like they know you better and they can trust you because they've actually seen you. They looked into your eyes, right? And you can do that. I think Zoom or Teams is the next best thing, but it's still not the same as like what we're doing today, Jenny. Most of our interviews are over or on a virtual platform for obvious reasons because we interview people over the world. But it's a different connection when you're physically in the same space with someone. So,
100%. Yeah. And I would just add the other thing too is just walking into an office, you have a total different sense of a company. I think it's 360, or it's all the senses, right?
Yes.
And there are people, once if I've taken a job order before meeting somebody, and then I walk into their office and look around, I will send different people to them.
Yes, that is an absolutely good point. The other thing is, I feel like during COVID, and then obviously we stopped doing that, but I think a lot of recruiters never picked it up again, and they just got out of the habit. And we definitely encourage all our clients to get back out there, get in front of your clients. And of course, that's easier to do in a local market. But even if you recruit nationally, go on a road trip or target a city that you already have a couple of clients at and then see what other meetings you can schedule. So last December, we actually did a little competition for our clients, which was like a client visit competition.
Yeah.
Which, because the funny thing is, if you work in a big agency, then they do these kinds of competitions, right? But when you have your own business, especially if you're a solo recruiter or a small firm, you don't do a competition, right?
We have that competition going right now, like literally this quarter.
Love it.
So hopefully,
who's winning?
I think Ryan and I are tied, but I'm about to overtake him this coming week. I'm pretty sure.
Love that. Let's talk then about that because it's always interesting. We have a few clients who are like married to their business partner. My wife, Lisa, and I tried this, and it didn't work for us. So how has that dynamic affected the business? And also being friends first with James as well. So does that complicate things?
Maybe. And you'd have to ask Ryan and James their perspective too. I think it does. It's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And I think for most people, James is the type of person, I'll answer the James part first. He's the type of person that really just gets along. So he
seems pretty easygoing.
He's pretty easygoing. Yeah. Overall, he just likes people and he can deal with just idiosyncrasies. And so I think other people told him, probably don't get in business with a couple.
Right.
And I think he was like, they're my friends. You can ask him now what his perspective is. But he is thankfully somebody that just goes with it. I think, and I believe the bigger challenge is probably between Ryan and me sometimes, because there is, and we've tried, but I don't believe we will ever have separation as long as we're working together between.
Of course, it's impossible. You can try and sort of put boundaries like, oh, this is work time. This is
right.
But yeah, it's going to bleed.
It bleeds over. Yeah. So it's just like everything. It's great some days, and some days, like the other day I was telling him, I think we were disagreeing about something in work. And I said, you know what? It would be really nice if I could go home to my husband and he would take my side and he would just talk. He would know that there's a jerk at work that's just not agreeing with me and he's wrong. And he's like, yeah, but also we get to talk about it now. You know, he was just going with it. So that's a challenge, but our conversations are so strange. if we're talking and we're trying to like make sense of something not business related, suddenly it'll be, imagine if a candidate said this, and we just frame it as like a recruiting situation. Imagine a client says XYZ. How would you deal with that? Well, that's exactly like this totally unrelated thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I see. So
that's hilarious. It looks from the outside, looks like it's working for you guys. And so,
most days.
Yeah. So that's awesome that you've made that work. So it sounds like it was a busy market and you guys were getting after it and you were like trying to get meetings and that kind of stuff. And you were getting good job flow. What would you say were the kind of really keys to getting to your first million?
I mean, you have all stars on the show that make that look easy. And I think for us, it certainly helped that we had three people who had experience that doing different things. So that is way less crazy than one person getting to a million in a year. So that was one.
Speak on that because for sure, three people can go faster than one person alone, right? And like, if you just think of the analogy of if you're in a boat, like rowing, you think of like, I mean, I don't row, but like you look at it in the Olympics or whatever. If you're a one person boat, then you're not going to be able to go as fast as three. I don't know if there is a three person boat, but you know, rowing together at the same time in sync with each other, you're going to go a lot faster, right? But that aside, it's still a big achievement, right? To pass $1 million in a year, that's awesome. But so you're all experienced, you're working together in the same market, but what were some of the other sort of, in terms of strategies and tactics that worked for you?
It worked. Well, I think we did connect with you that year, so our first year. And so you certainly helped us get processes in place. I think focusing on that niche and knowing what it was, especially in the beginning, we were very focused on Greenville, then greater South Carolina, which is still not a very big market. We started getting repeat business. We started getting repeat candidates. We could send candidates to multiple jobs. So all those things played out. Our database, I feel like, was getting very well put together and coded, tagged, et cetera. Hiring Karen and Tanya to help us, our virtual team to help us just get it all orderly. It's really helpful. It's still really helpful. Those things, meeting in person, again, the tailwinds of the market, and just basically no distraction that year. We had, I think we brought in one person that year and he was somewhat trained, kind of worked along with us. So we could just focus. Again, back to the focus thing. It was a good achievement. And I looked, you know, at some point I ran the statistics of businesses that make $1 million and I felt really good about it. I don't remember the number, but it wasn't that many. And I texted Ryan and James like, yay, we did it. And, but in reality, I think, you know, we have potential to keep going. So
absolutely. Yeah. I've read that stat too, and I can't remember it either, but it's got to be less than 20% of companies.
I think it was 5 or 10. It was something that I was
5% of companies. Yeah. It's something like that. Right. So yeah. Which, and considering there's millions of companies, you know, that's already quite an impressive achievement. So how have things evolved from there then, Jenny?
So that was 23 last year. Last year, we learned a lot. It was a challenge. Last year was a little more challenging and for several different reasons. We started the year, the market got a little softer, but I don't know if we immediately noticed that. We branched out very quickly. We just talked about our geography. So it was no longer Greenville, South Carolina. It was Charleston to ultimately DC. We added DC in the middle of the year last year, which was a market Ryan and I were very familiar with. But coming back, I came back to Raleigh where we had our non-compete and we hired some people. So we had four people last year in addition to us, in addition to our virtual team. And we spread out into more markets and suddenly everything was new again and it did not work well.
So you guys expanded when the market was softening. So that's got to make it tougher.
Yeah. And I think we I don't think the market softening was, it's not the market's fault. Like, but I think our strategy and commitment to what our initial strategy was kind of got lost in there. Mm-hmm. And we brought on people knowing this is going to take time to make this work, and knew but didn't know in our hearts like how much time it actually would take. Same with rebuilding or coming back to a market we don't have a database for times two or three. It was like hitting a wall, honestly.
Wow. So you hired four people in 2024.
We hired three.
Okay.
Wait, I can't add. We had four people in addition to us. So we hired two in 23.
Okay.
And one came earlier, one came later. And then we hired two more in the middle of the year, but again, not very strategic the way we did it.
Okay. So what's the team size as it stands now?
So today it is four. So in some ways we felt like we went back and great people that we had. It just, everything wasn't working for us.
So I'd love to talk more about that, because so many small recruiting businesses go through that of like hiring and then people don't work out and then they shrink again. And then they're like, oh, is it even worth hiring? Cause it's so hard, right? Or whatever. So I'd love to hear your experience with that. But also, just one of my clients used to say, recruiting is like, you know, two steps forward, one step back and three to the side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like not, success is not linear, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just continuously going up. It's also kind of down, and, you know, there's peaks and troughs. Mm-hmm. So looking back on 2024, then, what were some of the lessons or some of the things that you would do differently?
Yeah, so and I'm sure there's more. I probably should write all these down before it gets too far away. One, I think, and we all kind of agree, we honestly threw people in new markets, which was not helpful. Oh, we're managed. We know it enough. And I don't think we'll do that again. I say I don't think because I'm not sitting here with my two partners, but we've said that. So I think we're all on the same page. That's one. I think, again, we put people, even on like the market I was rebuilding, I kind of brought somebody along with me or was supporting her and then jumped in. And I just don't think that was the way to set them up for success. I don't think we were matter of fact enough amongst the partners, amongst everyone about, hey, these are really what the KPIs need to be. And we left a big company because part of it was, all it is KPIs. Well, I love KPIs now, but I don't say that out loud too often, and I don't say it. But I think you could celebrate a week, and I'm not the best at celebrating, but you can have a great week and celebrate it. Yes, we got everything. And then kind of forget about it the next couple weeks. And, oh, okay, I'll get it next week. And you forget that there's trailing indicators. So one thing I have done this year, just with the team member I'm working with now, is, and he probably hates it, but I'm telling him, listen, every week you're going to fill out this form. And, you know, it's more than just KPIs. It's like, how are you feeling? It's a lot of things that are important to talk about. But on our one-on-ones, it's that. And then there's last week's KPIs. There's 30 days KPIs. There's 90 days. There's 6 months. There's 12 months. Because that's the real story.
Yes.
And I completely missed that with some of the folks we were working with. It was just, let's just talk about last week. Okay, it was good, it was bad, great, let's move on. But I think being able to look back and say, hey, this is where I'm going, this is what we're doing. Are they green, yellow, or red? I actually have them. I have them marked green, yellow, or red. And, you know, if last week was all red, but your trailing 6 months is green, like let's get back at it. If it's all red for 6 months, well, this is a story, right? And I think that is something I really took to heart this past year.
That's where your analytical skills actually are coming into play here. So that's brilliant. I love that. The looking at patterns over a period of time and using that to help people to maximize their performance is fantastic, Jenny. That's a great idea. What else did you learn or take away from going through a rough patch last year?
What else? I think, it was very helpful to have partners in it with me. I think, I don't know if I've said this already on the show, if we were talking before, but there were days when I told Ryan, I think this is it. I'm done with recruiting. Probably won't be a recruiter tomorrow, or maybe I'm gonna go internal. Like, you know, there's always just threat. And, he would remind me like, nah, you gotta do this. And that was the conversation, and it worked vice versa. And there were, James came up to us a couple times and said, guys, what's going on? I don't think this, James is a recruiter. Like, he is, I'm sure if he took that test, his personality would just come up recruiter. Like, there's no other option for him. But I think the partnership was really, really helpful in that, because yes, we could look around and say, no, get back, like, come back. Like, we've all been there. You're going to get over it. You're going to have a great month soon. I don't know when it is, but like, just get back at it. And I think having other people to talk us off a ledge was a benefit.
Absolutely. I totally can. Yeah, I can see that for sure. You mentioned about hiring, and mm-hmm, obviously you've learned quite a lot from both positive and things that didn't work out. Going forward, what are the plans for growth then?
Yeah, well, I do want to say, I think we hired just incredible individuals. And the failure is where we struggled last year. I want to say, just, we take responsibility for that. Mm. And so where we had to make some decisions that just didn't feel good. Yeah, that's on us. But as far as where...
So hold on, let's double click on that.
Yeah.
Because that is a winning attitude, Jenny, for sure. And not everybody is willing to take ownership and responsibility for if a team member, you know, not making it. And that's powerful. So, you know, great job. The thing with taking responsibility is also means that you can change it, you can improve, you can do something different. Whereas if you blame other people, like, oh, they were no good, or, you know, those are the sort of recruiters that, like, blame candidates when their deal falls through or whatever. That's not going to lead to long-term success. The most successful recruiters take ownership out of everything, right, good and bad, and the deal falls through and they go, okay, what could I have done differently? Not in a way that you beat yourself up, right, because that's not productive or healthy, but what could I have done differently that might have led to a different outcome? Or what, maybe there's nothing that you could have done differently, but what were the red flags that I missed, or what were the questions that I didn't ask, or the earlier warning signs that I didn't pick up on that if I'd known earlier, I could have changed tack. I could have found a backup candidate or whatever, or I could have told the client not to make the offer. So I think this applies, the same thinking applies as a leader to team members as well. Like, if someone doesn't work out, then let's look at, well, you know, what could we have done differently as a business or as a manager to have, you know, maybe had a different outcome there. So I think that's a really healthy success trait.
Thanks. I don't know if they feel that way, but I do want to just reiterate, I am so grateful for them because they are great people.
Awesome. And that's like the worst part of running a business.
It's the worst.
Is letting people go. That's not you don't start a business with that in mind, right?
Right. And I mean they were basically on us, like, hey, just the payroll. We're not gonna make it with all the things we need to do.
That's rough.
Yeah, I wanna put that out there and say they are great.
That's cool. And so you've kind of consolidated back down to, so there's three of you plus one employee plus two virtual team members?
Correct, yep.
Okay, awesome. So where do we go from here then?
Well, great question. I think for me, the conference was, I just want to focus personally this year, have a year where there's a few distractions, but not many. I'm helping the guy develop DC right now. So I will be up there hopefully next week.
Cool.
But focusing on him, we're all kind of committed to how can we all be invested in the person we're training right now. We may hire again at the end of the year. it is not something I am going to do, but if James and Ryan kind of find the runway or the capacity, we're going to be supportive of that. We have talked about continuing to grow, and you know, coming from this conference, there is always this, maybe we should just be independent recruiters because it works so well for so many people, and I totally respect it, and I think there's incredible wisdom in it. But in my heart of hearts, every time I sit back and think, where do we want to go? I start writing goals. It's always growing a team. It's challenging us in ways that we're truly, you know, clearly we were challenged in that last year. But I think as we're coming out of that, we want that.
Awesome. That's the right answer then, mm-hmm. Jenny, because you obviously have that desire, right? Where does that must mean something, that you have this desire to grow and to scale. And so at our Live Summit, we had speakers with all different business models and sizes, right? Which is cool. There's not one right definition for success, right? Mm-hmm. It's what does success mean to you? What is going to fulfill you and so on. So we had Aaron Opaluski, who's massively scaled, mm-hmm. right? And for him, my key takeaway there comes down to that, like, you've decided, you've made that commitment, we are going to grow. And that means that, okay, we hired some people, we lost some people. That's not the end of the story, right? Now, okay, what can we learn? What can we improve? Okay, let's go again and hire more people. And you just keep going because you're committed to achieving that. And then we had others who, like Nate Schott, mm-hmm. who is solo with two virtual team members. And he's, you know, billing lots mm-hmm. with that business model. Mm-hmm. And then Mike Williams, who's kind of in between, he wants to grow. He's at like mm-hmm. seven people right now. Mm-hmm. So, I think, if you guys have that desire, then that must mean that you're meant to do it.
We'll see what it means. I do think we have a lot of infrastructure to still put down to make it easier next time. And the next time is not tomorrow. It's maybe several months out. But
sure,
I think that's a takeaway, because even when we were chopping that board, I was like, what do I want to accomplish? And it was like, it was about a team again. I'm like,
okay. That's funny. Yeah, so chopping the board, we should just explain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So explain the board.
Yeah. Do you want to explain?
No, you go for it.
So as a fun exercise at the end of the event, then you chop through a wooden board with your hand.
Yeah.
Right. And so are you willing to share what was the goal on that,
on that board? I'll speak generally. It was getting a number of people to a certain amount and billings
great
by 2028.
Love it. A couple of things I wanted to follow up on. One was the culture of the business, because when you're a one-person business, you don't really need to think about culture.
Yeah.
Right? But when there's starting to be more people working together as a team, initially you, Ryan, and James, mm-hmm. and then you've added other people, then that becomes something we need to really reflect on and design, like be intentional about designing rather than just have a culture by default. So right. How would you describe the culture at Apex and why is it that way?
Yeah. So I think culture is a big question. You know, when we take in jobs, we always ask about culture, but I think there's probably more to it than what I will share. Right. I do think part of I'm going to talk about the good and bad. I think part of what went wrong was we were just three people just getting deals, making things happen, going to a coffee shop when it seemed like a good time to go. And then when we brought people in, they're like, oh, this recruiting is great. You know, it's just so, this is so nice. But they didn't see a culture of, hey, this is how you're excellent every day. And I think that was a failure on our part and something that we have reflected on. The good side of our culture, and I think the enduring thing that has brought people to us is, I think I work with two great guys. We immediately, I think probably our second conversation was, so what are we going to do for kickoff next year? And then it was, no, our old company called it kickoff. We're going to call it tip off. So every year we have agreed. And this year it was a little bit of a fight. Like, do we really need to do this? And the takeaways was, yes, we're going to do this every year, no matter what. So the first year it was just Ryan James and I, we went to Colorado, climbed a mountain, like, you know, the epic apex story. The second year we went to, where did we go? Wasn't that long ago. Oh, we took like a road trip to California. We saw Yosemite, Big Sur, some other places. And then our third year, we went to a resort in Mexico, a little more low key. But each year we come back with, you know, stories and just something to look forward to. And then the first quarter so right now we have a kind of quarterly team challenge. And there's always a challenge about who gets to pick where we go within reason. So this year our quarterly challenge is how many like internal candidates can we bring in and interview. Whoever has the most over February and March gets to pick their place. And we've named our places and there's a big rush for it. So stuff like that. We love
to eat.
Awesome. I think we've brought in people and we've all gained a couple pounds. So we're kind of working on that. So then there's like the shift culture that's extreme diet or fitness culture that creeps in when we eat too much. But we do try to celebrate.
It sounds like a fun place to work.
Ryan and James are way more fun than me. So all credit to them. And then I don't know what I bring, but something.
Well, okay. Let me reflect a few things back to you. So first of all, you made a really interesting comment that trying to bring new people into, so you're the three of you, very experienced doing deals and kind of have found your own way of working,
mm-hmm.
but then bringing a new person in and you're not necessarily the role model of how they should build their desk from scratch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's thinking about how do we build a culture that will work for people coming and joining us who aren't already established, right? And so that's an interesting dynamic. I love it does sound fun, Jenny. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you went and climbed that mountain in Colorado and you took pictures for LinkedIn and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was obviously your name is Apex. Mm-hmm. And so there was like the mountain theme. That was cool. And I love that you still do kind of competitions, even though you're small.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes it fun, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah. Anything else that's kind of core to, you know, your culture at Apex? Let me pretend that I'm a recruiter taking a job order to recruit for you. And I'm saying, tell me about the culture. Sure. How would you describe it?
I think, well, beyond just the fun stuff, now we have kind of switched gears. And the middle of last year, Ryan just signed it was a month-to-month lease, but we had been going to a co-working space and just kind of as you need, we'll meet up once or twice a week. And Ryan said, you know what, I'm just making this happen. Which is a very Ryan thing to do, and just said, hey, we have an office. And so we got into the office and now we are in the office 3 days a week, which it's not crazy in this world. And I think 5 days could be great, but none of us are ready for that. So there's some accountability there. But if a recruiter were taking a job, I would say every recruiter says this, and it might be somewhat true, but we are like, we want to care about people as much as we can. We have a conscience, like we need to work with it. And we try to do right by the client. So for instance, I have one situation right now where the candidate stayed 6 months. Our guarantee is 90 days for our contingent guarantee. And they reached out and said, what can you do? And the answer for us is like, we're not going to leave you hanging at 6 months, right? So we'll either replace it or we'll find some way to make you happy at the end of this. And there's no looks from Ryan or James like, no, just take the money. You know, there's zero expectation there. In fact, if I didn't do something for that client after 6 months, they'd look at me and say, really? Is this right? And I think that's something we want to ingrain in people around us. Like, that's a small thing. And I think a lot of recruiters will do it, but certainly not all. Certainly not a lot. I know
yes.
from past the past. And there's a way you want to protect your business, but you also want to sit in front of people. And we are local in part because if I see you at a coffee shop, I don't want to have to hide. I want to say hello. I want to sit down with you, see how your family is doing, and not feel like my conscience is being pricked.
Love that. Well said. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, because values are central to culture, right? It's really the most tangible thing you can define a culture by is values. So that's awesome, Jenny. In terms of tactics, so you guys have, you've built a business from scratch, one new business, you've come through a tough market. What's working for you guys in terms of, building business and generating new clients right now?
What's working? I think we're kind of settled in, thankfully, after this stretch. But it's the basics. I think we are still big on cold calls. We do business development calls that are cold. We try to do a little bit. I try to do a little bit on LinkedIn, or a lot, as much as I can. We have back to Karen and Tanya and just what they're doing with the database. Like, I feel like most of our markets are pretty well mapped, pretty well coded, tagged. So if I have a candidate that fits X kind of client, I could just do a quick search. X kind of client knows about them. And so that's helpful. Another thing I learned, I was listening to some unrelated podcast, and this real estate guy in some other place sends out like a house of the week. So I've just been sending out a job of the week to my like 300 target candidates in one market. And now when I'm calling them, oh yeah, yeah, I get your emails. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The job of the week. Yeah. Yeah. I have somebody like, and we put like a very clear referral bonus on there. So it's the shortest, easiest email I write every day. And I like give myself like props. I have like a point system for myself, and I like give myself some 5 points, which means nothing to you, but makes me feel good.
Love this. So 3 key things I'm taking away from that. Mm-hmm. And you said, so back to basics, it's being on the phone. Number 2 is your database is very well, built out, coded. So it makes it easy to market candidates or target, put campaigns together. And number 3 is you're also actively posting on LinkedIn. Like, in terms of cold calling, is there a number per day, or is it like an amount of time, or what's the commitment to that?
Well, we don't have crazy KPIs. I think, team-wise, I believe it's like 50 contacts a week or connects. So not like if you get voicemails, that doesn't count for anything. So that's across the board. So if you have a candidate heavy week, fine. If you have a BD heavy week, fine. I try for like 20 contacts a day. I have a whole new system I'm trying this quarter, which I like so far. But it comes out to about 20 calls a day.
Okay, connects. Awesome. 20 connects a day.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, a connect could be a text that says, I will be at this interview at X amount of time. Like, so it's
okay,
not
so
as
Okay, so it's
crazy.
A touch point. So what counts as a connect?
So a connect is a candidate or client, I guess, having some sort of investment in your conversation. So it's a call, so it's an internal, it's a response to a LinkedIn message with like a move forward.
Okay.
Yeah. So not too crazy.
It's where you get some kind of engagement.
Yeah.
So it could be a conversation.
Right.
You don't get hung up on.
Right.
If it's a LinkedIn message, they actually respond.
Right.
Then it counts as a connect.
Right.
Okay. I get it. Yeah. That makes sense. Love it. Jenny, we could keep talking because this is fun, but we've already been at it for an hour. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So glad and grateful that you agreed to do this.
Yeah, for sure. Can I actually say a couple more things?
Oh, please. Absolutely.
No, I think, just because I'm here and it's something that is, if you want to add it or not, feel free. But I do volunteer in a couple of job search groups, and I have found, and just for recruiters in general, like that's been very meaningful to me, because our job does become very transactional. We're headhunting. We can't help millions of people that reach out to us, but I have been involved since I started recruiting. I actually found my first job through like a job search group where a recruiter spoke. So I got to volunteer back there, and I'm on the board post COVID. The DC group followed me down or stayed with me, and there's virtual meetings. So I get to still volunteer with these two groups, career confidence and career network ministry. And when I do that, it's like a energizer in the job itself, because the job can get meaningless or can feel meaningless, can feel demoralizing, all these things. And then when you actually use those skills to go help somebody, it's like, huh, like you have like 3 more weeks of energy left. So I just want to add that.
Love that. So we'll put the links in the show notes, but tell me again, what were the two groups?
So they're called Career Confidence. And if anyone ever wanted to be on a panel, there's always opportunities for any recruiter, any level to be on panels. Career Confidence and Career Network Ministry.
That is awesome, Jenny. Oh. And yeah, I can see that really topping up your own fulfillment and energy for the job as well. So fantastic. Is there anything else we haven't discussed that you wanted to share?
No, I think that's all.
All right. Thank you so much, Jenny.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button, and I'll see you next time.